All right, good evening, everyone. So I really want to thank Sandy for inviting me back to be able to share with you a couple of sessions over the course of this Yafi Scholars program. And I think we're going to learn a couple of different classes together, focusing on a couple of different biblical personalities. But for tonight, we're going to focus a little bit on Avram Avinu, on our first patriarch, on Abraham. So whenever we speak about Avram, the general association of Avram usually is an Isha Chesed, a man who personifies the concept or the attribute of kindness, of chesed. And in fact, again, if you take a look at number one, remember we're introduced to one of the most dramatic episodes, Vayira Eilav Hashem Be'elonei Mamrei, V'hu Yoshev Pesach Ha'ol Kechom Yom. So this is the beginning of Parshas Vayira. And remember, again, following on the heels of Parshas Lech Lecha, Avraham Avinu undergoes circumcision at an advanced age. And just a few days post-circumcision, he's sitting by the entranceway of the tent, Kichom Hayom. Vayisa Ina Vayar Vinesh Loshan Hashim Nitzavim Alov Vayar Vayaras Likrasan Pesachal Vayishtachu Arza. Avraham Avinu is sitting by the entranceway of the tent. He sees these three men in the distance. He gets up and he runs towards them. Rashi is a reactive mefarish. Rashi is a reactive commentary, which means that Rashi sees something in the text that he finds intriguing. He sees something in the text that he seems to feel is a bit out of order, and that causes him to advance a commentary. So if you're Rashi, and you're looking at this verse, what's bothering you?
Why was he sitting
at the entranceway of the tent? This group has become much more tame. I haven't been here in 2 years, and no, all right. So why is he sitting at the entranceway of the tent? Meaning, why is he doing that? At the end of the day, he's post-circumcision, he's healing. Why is he sitting at the entrance of the tent? Which Rashi explains, Liros, im yesh over v'shav v'yachnisim b'veso. So says Rashi, in order to see if there are any possibilities ultimately for hachnasas orchim, for hospitality, Avram Avinu's home was an open home. Avram Avinu's entire essence was one of chesed, was one of kindness. And so even if he was a few days post-circumcision, nothing was going to stop him from continuing along that path of chesed. And in fact, again, we read in last week's parasha, Vayita Eshel Be'er Shava. So in the pasuk says, Avraham Avinu planted an Eshel in Be'er Sheva. Vayikra Sham B'Shem Hashem Kel Olam. And it's there in that Eshel that HaKadosh Baruch Hu called out in the name of Hashem, God of the universe. And the Mefarshim tried to understand what is an Eshel. What is an Eshel? So Rashi over here, number 4, quotes the idea, Ravu Shmuel. So Rashi quotes a Talmudic dispute. Chad Amar Pardes, Lahavi Menoperos, Lachem Mesuda. One says Eshel, it actually means an orchard. Avraham Avinu planted an orchard in order to be able to go ahead and share the fruit with his guests. The Chad Amar Pundak. And one said that Eshel actually means an inn, a hotel, a bed and breakfast, la'achsanya, in order to be able to host guests, ubo komine peros. And in that hotel, in that bed and breakfast, he had all different types of food. Interestingly enough, now we understand, according to the first opinion, how eshel could mean an orchard, because eshel could also mean a fruit-bearing tree. According to the second opinion, where did they get that eshel could mean an inn, or a bed and breakfast, the hotel which Avraham Avinu served food to guests? So amazingly enough, the commentaries point out that it could be that Eshel is an acronym for Achila, Shtia, Lina. Aleph for Achila, food. Shin for Shtia, drink. Lamed for Lina, a place to stay. That Avraham Avinu was... So I'm sharing this with you because when we think about the first patriarch, this is the midah that we see. You know, the Gemara says that if a person is in possession of certain negative traits, so one has to doubt their yichus. One has to doubt their Jewish lineage. So Talmud doesn't obviously mean it in a literal sense, but it means it in a figurative sense. Meaning there are certain core Jewish values. There are certain core Jewish traits. So for example, the Gemara says, if somebody is not a gomel chasadim, If somebody is not a kind person, if someone's not a generous person, so literally we wonder, well, what's wrong with your spiritual DNA? Because at the end of the day, we are the children of Avram and Yitzchak, we're the children of Sarah and Rachel. We are the children of these individuals who personified this attribute of human kindness. It's part and parcel of who we are. I remember that I was with my family in Israel during the Second Lebanon War. And so obviously we were following the news every single day what was going on. And I remember, I don't remember which newspaper it was, but one of the newspapers had on the front page cover, the IDF had just conducted a raid. I don't remember if it was in Jenin or if it was in Ramallah. And they had gone in to clean out terrorist cells. So the picture was of a group of these blindfolded, handcuffed terrorists. And there was an IDF soldier standing over them, pouring water into their mouths, giving them to drink. They were sitting in the sun, giving them to drink. And I don't remember what the caption, of the picture was, but it could have been Rahmanim b'nei Rahmanim. Compassionate ones, the children of compassionate ones. Because we all know that if the tables were reversed, that treatment would not be there. And the truth is, there's something unique about the Jewish people. There's something unique that's in our spiritual DNA, that chesed, that kindness, is part and parcel of who and what we are. So when we think, when we think about Avram Avinu, so ultimately what first comes to mind is an Isha Chesed. But I don't want to focus on that tonight, because I think we've all learned that theme of Avram Avinu's life. And we've all dwelled a lot on that aspect of his personality. Instead, what I want to try to point out to you tonight are, we'll see how much time we spend, but two or three different aspects of the Abrahamic persona. Two or three different parts of Avram Avinu that made him unique. And you understand, of course, whatever made Avram Avinu unique also is embedded in our spiritual DNA. Whatever traits he had, we, his children, have those traits as well. So in essence, when we learn about Avram Avinu, we're truly learning about ourselves. So let's explore this together. So if you take a look at number 5, the Rambam, in Hilchos Avodah Zarah, in the Laws of Idolatry, interestingly enough, in the beginning of the Laws of Idolatry, he kind of gives a little bit of a history lesson about the evolution of idolatry. Because remember, and this history lesson, in fact, in the Rambam, begins first with Adam HaRishon, first with Adam, and then traces its way all the way through Avram Avinu. That's where the Rambam pretty much stops his history lesson. So we're going to skip all the way to Aram. So look what he writes. 5 Aleph. V'chachomim shahayu bahem, kigon kohanehem ukiyotze bahem, midamim she'in sham eloka ela hakochavim v'hagalgolim, she'na'asu atzuro sa'ila begalalam, lidimosim. So the Rambam is describing over here that over time, over the generations, people began to forget about God and they turned their attention to deifying God's creations. They began to look at the sun and the moon and the stars, which are awesome creations, but instead of seeing them as manifestations of God's creative handiwork, they began to see those very items as Godheads themselves. And the Rambam goes on, skip down to the end of paragraph Aleph, Va'al derech zeh hayu ha'olam holech u'miskalgel ad shenolad amudo shel olam v'Avram Avinu. And the Rambam says, this is how humanity was progressing. That humanity became essentially a polytheistic culture. Man was worshipping all different kinds of things, and this was the status quo until Avram Avinu. Paragraph Beis. Yes?
Are you suggesting that first it was monotheistic, then it became polytheistic, and Avram Avinu brought it back?
Absolutely. That's what the Torah says. Adam HaRishon worshipped one God. The Torah at the end of Bereshit already in Noach begins to discuss that as huchal likra b'shem Elokim, then man began to worship other gods. That descended to the generation of the flood. Flood, everything is wiped out. For a little while post-flood, things are okay. But then again, things begin to unravel. Yeah, that's the Rambam's narrative that seems to be taken from the text. So look at paragraph Beis. My pleasure. Kevan shenigma isan zeh. So as Avram Avinu began to mature, and now, the Rambam is basing this statement based on Midrashic texts. Some of this is Midrash, there are a couple of passages in the Talmud, but these stories about Avram Avinu's childhood, we do not find in the Torah. Because remember again, the first piece of information we find about Avram Avinu in the Torah is? First piece of information?
Right, his ancestry, that he was born. He was born to Terach. That's the first piece of information that we're told at the end of Parshas Noach. Nothing dramatic, anything more than telling us about his father and about his brothers. Tells us he gets married, and then of course we go to Lech Lecha, which we'll discuss in a little bit. The Torah doesn't give us any narrative about Avram Avinu's childhood. All of those stories about his childhood are gleaned from the Medrash and from small sections of the Talmud. So the Rambam incorporates that into his narrative, and he writes the following. When this child literally means when the boy was weaned. So what it doesn't literally mean, as the boy began to mature, he schil shotate bedaito. He began to contemplate. V'hischil lachshov bayom ubalaylo. And he began to think. V'hoya tamia heich afshar sheyia hagilgal hazeh noheg tamid v'lo yiyya lo manhig umi yisadevoso. So it's very interesting because Avram Avinu begins to look at the world, and Avram Avinu begins to see a world and a universe that is so complex, that is so multifaceted, that has so many different layers. And he begins to think to himself, it's impossible that there's not a manhig. It's impossible that there's not a leader. It's impossible that there's not a driving force behind this universe. And what happens? He says, "V'lo hayolo melami." Now, the Rambam says something interesting. You know, Avraham Avinu didn't have a rebbe. He didn't have a mora. He didn't have a teacher. "V'lo modia davar." He had no one to instruct him in any way about finding God. But rather, again, he lived in an idolatrous society. His father, his mother, they were all idolaters. And he worshipped along with them. So this is amazing. The real narrative of Avram Avinu is a young man who grew up in an idolatrous society, who worshipped idolatry along with everyone else. Because that's what his parents were doing, that's what his siblings were doing, that's what his friends were doing. This was the accepted theological norm in his society. But the whole time he's wondering in his heart, there's got to be more. There has to be more. There has to be something additional. It doesn't make sense. There has to be one word the Rambam keeps using over and over. There has to be a manhig. There has to be one driving force behind this universe that brings all of the disparate pieces together. And the Rambam goes on, he says, "V'libo moshote tu mevin, ad shehesig derech ha'emes." So this is an amazing statement, and actually I find it to be almost an incomprehensible statement. Avram Avinu found the truth. He found the truth. It's hard to appreciate that because remember, our Judaism is based on a system of Mesorah. So much of our theological truths and our tenets have been passed down already from generations. There are things that we discover about ourselves. There are unique aspects in our Judaism that we begin to discover as we begin to self-actualize. But there's very little in a theological sense that we discovered. Theology, as we have it, has been discovered and is being passed. Avram Avinu discovers this for himself. There's no teacher, there's no Rebbe, there's no Shir, there's no Yafi Scholar Series. There's nothing for him to attend to be able to have this information. But here's what's amazing. Avram Avinu possesses an incredible trait. And it's the trait of attentiveness. The trait of attentiveness. Avram Avinu is attentive to the world. And when you're attentive to the world, when you open your eyes, your ears, your heart, and your soul, you begin to understand things for what they are. This attentiveness of Avram Avinu, says the Rambam, is what allowed him ultimately to be able to discover HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the Rambam goes on, we're not going to do the rest of it, I'm sorry. And if you skip to number six, I'll show you something amazing. Along this same line of attentiveness. So first of all, again, actually before we go to number six. So according to the Rambam, now just as an aside, by the way, remember the Rambam's whole narrative also is that Avraham Avinu is finding God at the age of 40. There's a whole other sub-discussion, which is not our topic for today, and exactly which point in time, which point in life Avraham Avinu found God. Was it when he was younger? Was it when he was more mature? I'm not going to say older, I'll just say mature. When he was more mature. So that's a fundamental dispute. And by the way, that's not just an academic dispute. How you understand that sub-narrative has an incredible impact as to how you understand the evolution of Avraham Avinu. Is he someone who discovers God as a child or someone who discovers God as an adult leads to two dramatically different personalities. The Rambam is of the opinion that Avraham Avinu discovers God at the age of 40. But what I want to try to highlight to you, because to me this is what's most dramatic, is that Avraham Avinu, because he lives life with his eyes wide open, because he's attentive, because he pays attention to the world, this leads him to an understanding and a connection of God. Now, just as an aside, I think a few years ago we spoke about the Rambam, so I'll just tell you something amazing. I don't know if you remember, it's probably going back 3-4 years ago when we learned about the Rambam. So if you remember again, the Rambam discusses that there's a mitzvah to love HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's a mitzvah to love God. Right? We say it every single day. V'yahavto es Hashem Elokecha. You have to love Hashem. Now aside from b'chal levavecha, b'chal nafshecha, b'chal modecha, you have to love God with your entirety. Now besides the inherent difficulty of legislating love, which we'll say for a different time, the act come to a love of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. How does that happen? So if, do you remember again, anyone remember, what does the Rambam say? How do you come, and remember, the Rambam sets a very high bar. The Rambam says that a person has to love God like a man loves a woman. That's the expression of the Rambam. That intensity, that passion that a man feels towards a woman, that a woman feels towards a man, that's the love that a person is supposed to have to. So wonderful, I'm all in. How do I find it? Could always count on Mrs. Miller. Excellent. Right? By looking at nature. The Rambam says, all you need to do is go out and look at the world. Look at the sunrise. Look at the sunset. Look at the fall foliage. Look at the rain. Look at the snow. Watch the ocean. And all you need to do is look at the beautiful natural world and you will find God. You know, Rav Soloveitchik discusses this. The Rav discusses this idea in his essays on tefillah, in his essays on prayer. So the Rav explains that there are different mediums. There are different ways in which we connect through HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the most well-known medium, of course, is the intellectual medium, where we connect with God through our intellect. But the Rav also speaks about the concept called the volitional medium, where a person interacts with God not ultimately through something I learn or something I process, but through something I experience. And the Rav quotes Thoreau, who says that one could feel the breath of infinity against the nape of his neck while standing under a starlit sky. So the Rav is quoting this from Thoreau, but the Rambam says that it's really the Rambam also, this idea that you could find God in nature. And the truth is, I think we've all experienced this. When you see something dramatic in nature, you feel close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, it's often difficult to quantify that experience because, you know, when I learn and I have an intellectual experience, I understand what's rooting me to God. Sometimes when you see beautiful nature, it's hard to understand what is spiritual in the experience, but I just feel spiritual. By the way, we know that that is true. How do we know that that's true? Because what is the halacha? What does Jewish law say? When you see something spectacular in nature, you make a bracha. Right? If a person sees the Yama Gadol, you go, you see the ocean, you see the Atlantic, you say, or any large body of water, Baruch atah Hashem Elokeinu melech haolam, oseh ma'aseh bereishis. God, you created the world. I see a rainbow, zuchabes, and there are different things. You see certain types of animals in nature. There's a Mishana HaBrios. There's different kinds of brachos that you make on. Why am I making brachos on nature? It's this idea that I could find God through nature. Where does the Rambam get this idea that one can find God through nature? Rambam finds it in Avraham Avinu. The Rambam finds this paradigmatic example of finding God through nature, but it's not just through nature. It's through attentiveness to nature, through Avraham Avinu. This is what I want to call from the Rambam. That Avraham Avinu, we're going to put nature on the side for just a moment now, because what I want to focus on is this midah of attentiveness. This idea that Avraham Avinu opened his eyes, his ears, his heart and his soul to what was going on around him. Because here's what's amazing about the Rambam. You know, everyone else saw the same star, moon, and sun, and sky. Everyone else saw the same rainbow, saw the same ocean, saw the same water. Everyone else saw it. So why didn't it impact anyone else like it did Avraham Avinu? Why didn't it impact them? And the answer is, well, we'll see what the answer is. Take a look at number six. See what I'm quoting to you from the Svas Emes. And I put a little bit of a biography over here. Rav Yehuda Aryeh Leib ben Avram Mordechai Alter was the Rebbe of Gur. Gur was a town in Poland that before the Holocaust had a very sizable Hasidic population. It's actually amazing. You could go to the city of Gur, which is about 45 minutes outside of Warsaw. It's actually amazing. For some reason, the graves of the Ger Rebbes, of these Hasidic rabbis, were not touched by the Nazis, Yimach Shemam Bezirchem. The rest of the cemetery was destroyed, but the little section where the Rebbes were buried was not touched by the Nazis. Amazing. There's one Jew left in Gur. It's actually a very tight. I was there a couple of summers ago. We had a layover in Warsaw for a day, so we got a guide. There's one Jew left in Gur. It's amazing. He was himself from a Hasidic family. He was hidden by a Gentile family over the course of the war. And after the war, he married one of the daughters of the Gentile family who hid him over the course of the war. And over time, he just kind of assimilated into the general culture. So we asked him, you know, why did he stay? Obviously, a Jew goes there with a different amount of baggage. Well, why did you stay here? And he said something amazing. He said, because someone has to watch the cemetery. He has the keys. He's the only one with the keys to the cemetery, so you can go to the grave of the Svas Emes, of the Imre Emes, of great rabbis of yesteryear, and there's one Jew left in Gur who watches over it. An incredible, incredible thing. So the Svas Emes kind of picks up on the Ramban. Nachmanides asks the question, and he says, Hiksha shene'emar lech lecho, b'li sheniskar mikodem chibaso. So we're going to get a little bit more into lech lecho in a little while. But for our purposes right now, this Ramban asks a very interesting question. Remember I told you we're introduced to Avram Avinu at the end of Parshas Noach by telling us that Terach gave birth, right? Terach had a son named Avram, tells about Avram's siblings, tells about Avram's marriage. And then right after that, the Torah says, Lech Lecha. Right, Avram Avinu was given the first of his 10 tests. Lech lecha, leave your homeland and go into uncharted waters, uncharted territories of Eretz Canaan. Go to Canaan. God, of course, doesn't tell him Canaan. He just says, Ela arta sha'ar areka, I'll show you where. So the Ramban says something very interesting. The Ramban says, in general, when you look at the way great personalities are introduced to us throughout Tanakh, generally, there is like an introduction. There's an introduction. There's almost like, for example, by Moshe Rabbeinu, right? We are given a whole story about Moshe Rabbeinu before he ever becomes Moshe Rabbeinu, right? What are we told? What's the first word about Moshe Rabbeinu? Right? So first of all, we're told about that he goes out to see his brothers, but back up. We're told about... Correct. We're told about the men and women of Levi. Well, according to Rashi, they separated, then they got back together. We're told about Yochevet's pregnancy. We're told about the fact that he was good, right? She saw that he was good. He was born. We're told that she was able to hide him in the house for 3 months. So much biographical detail about Moshe Rabbeinu. And says Ramban, yeah, because he's one of the main characters. He's one of the main characters in Chumash. And so the Torah needs to give an introduction to our great people. And by the way, it's not just Moshe. Let's back up a little bit. We were introduced to our second matriarch, right, this past week. To Rivka Imenu. We're told a lot about Rivka, right? We're told about the whole episode by the well. We're told about what happens in her father's home, with her interactions with her brother. Why all the lead-up? Says the Ramban, because the Torah in general introduces us to great personalities. The Torah lays the groundwork. So asks the Ramban, how could it be that with arguably one of the most pivotal figures in the entirety of Jewish history, in the entirety of Torah, Jewish history, Avraham Avinu, there's no background. We're told he's born, he marries, he sets out with his father and his son for some destination, which we'll talk about, and then boom, Vayomer Hashem al Avram lech lecha. Get up and go. No introduction. Now get ready, because I'm about to change your life forever. The Svas Emes says something that is dramatically amazing. Dramatically amazing. He quotes the Zohar. U'bazohar HaKadosh Nira, get ready for this. There is no introduction to Avram Avinu because herein lies the ultimate praise of Avram. Sheshama ze ha-ma'amar lech lecha sheneemar mehashem yisbarach lechol ha'anoshim tamid. says the Zohar something absolutely. If I were saying it, you could say silver, that's crazy. But it's the Zohar that's saying it. I mean, you can still disagree. You don't have to agree with the Zohar. Right? But it's dramatically amazing. The Zohar says, there's a very simple reason. Because Lech Lecha was not at first a statement directed to Avram Avinu. Says the Zohar, God was calling out for generations, Lech Lecha. He was looking for someone to accept the mantle of monotheism. He was looking for someone to be his ambassador on this earth. He was looking for someone to try to uplift and to inspire humanity. And for years and years and years, however long, the Zohar says, God is calling out, Lech Lecha. You think Avraham Avinu was the first person to hear it? No, he wasn't the first person to hear it. Plenty of people heard it. But what happened? What happened? Just too busy. God, I hear you. I'm going to get back to you. Hold that Lech Lecha thought. Right? I'm in the middle of something right now. I got a couple things I got to figure out. Once I tie up these loose ends, I'm your man. I'm going to be there. And of course, again, out of sight, out of mind. For years, says the Zohar, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was calling out Lech Lecha. You know what the difference with Avraham Avinu was? He wasn't the first person to hear the call. He was the first person to heed the call. This is the attentiveness of Avraham Avinu. And by the way, if that wasn't enough, the Sfas Emes says something more. Not here, but later on in Chumash Shmos. The Sfas Emes says something amazing. He says, this happened another time in history. Where else did it happen? Where else did it happen? Excellent. It happened by the Sneh. It happened by the burning bush. Says the Sfas Emes, quotes the same Zohar. If you remember, again, I apologize, I didn't put the wording on the store sheet over here. But the Pasuk says, Moshe Rabbeinu is out in the deserts of Midian, shepherding his father-in-law's flock. He's walking back, and what happens? V'hine sar liros. He turned to the side to see Hamar'azos. What is this strange thing? This bush that's on fire and yet is not being consumed. Says the Zohar something amazing. That bush was on fire for who knows how long. And God was just waiting for someone to take notice. For someone to turn aside. For someone to be attentive and pay attention to what was unfolding in front of their eyes. Says the Sfas Emes, who knows how many people passed by that burning bush. Oh, very interesting. Sorry, kids, we can't stop right now. Let's keep going. Right? Who knows how many people passed by and it piqued their curiosity, but for whatever reason did not have the attentiveness, the will, or the desire to stop and to see what was unfolding. Moshe Rabbeinu was the first person who chose to veer away from the trodden path and be able to see the burning bush. But back to Avram. Says the Sfas Emes something amazing. This is the attentiveness of Avram Avinu. The same attentiveness, ultimately, that allowed Avram to discover God just by looking at the natural world was the same attentiveness that allowed Avram Avinu to hear Lech Lecha. Says the Sfas Emes, there's no great introduction to Avram Avinu. Get ready. Do you know why? And says the Sfas Emes something amazing. Because the truth is, God didn't choose Avram. Avraham chose God. Avraham Avinu was the one who found God. He discovered him first. Avraham Avinu was the one who decided to heed the call of Lech Lecha. Once Avraham Avinu decides to listen, then God says, okay, you're going to listen. Vayomer Hashem al Avraham, Lech Lecha. You've decided to listen? Okay, you're my man. Here, I now give you the personalized command. This is the first attribute of Avraham Avinu that I want to draw your attention to. This attribute of attentiveness, this attribute of living life with eyes open, with ears open, with a heart and soul that's open. Because so often in life there are so many things that unfold all around us, but they pass us by simply unaware, bless you, simply unaware because we're not living life with a sense of attentiveness. I'll just show you something interesting. It's more cute than anything else. If you look, I apologize, a little bit out of order, but if you look at number 11, so this is actually in a sefer called Be'er HaChaim, which is on Chanukah. I know it's a little bit early, but you know, Thursday's Rosh Chodesh, we're almost there. So he actually tells over here a beautiful mashal, a beautiful parable by the Dubna Magid. I'll tell it to you part of it inside, and then the rest of it we'll do outside. So he tells the Dubna Magid, who of course, again, you know, the Dubna Magid was well known for couching his messages in mashalim, for couching his messages in different types of parables, recognizing that often people are able to relate to a message more in the form of a story sometimes than we are able to in an outright message. So Ibn Magid was famous for his beautiful parables, his beautiful mashalim. See, he says over here an incredible mashal. He talks about an individual. We'll just read the first couple of lines inside. He says, Shepam haya ish ani ve'evyon, shehalach lechapes es mazalo. There was once a man who was mamish down on his luck. He was impoverished. He wasn't privileged to find his bashert yet. He wasn't privileged to establish a family. And he went to find his mazel. So how do you find your mazel? So in the bracket, again, remember, this is not Torah Shebech Salah. I'm just giving you the mashal, but you'll take the story for its beautiful impact. So he says, you know, every person has a mazel. Without getting into what mazel is, in the Dubna Magid's context, he says over here that every person has like a malach. Every person has an angel who is kind of assigned to him to help him with his different needs. So this man figures, you know what? I'm so down on my mazel. I have to go out and find my mazel. So the mashal goes on. I'll tell you this outside. So the mashal goes on, and as he's on his way to go ahead and find his mazel, he comes across a tree. And the tree is all distressed. And the tree says, listen, I don't know what's going on. I'm a fruit tree, and I can't bear any fruit. Do me a favor, guy, man in our story, main character. If you're going to find your mazel, maybe you could find out a little bit about what's going on with me. Why I don't have the mazel to bring forth fruit. Okay, no problem. Ask for your mazel also. He travels on a little bit longer. He comes across a princess. The princess is very downtrodden as well. Why? She says, again, because at the end of the day, there is so many matches suggested to me with so many wonderful princes, and none of them have come to fruition. And I'm nervous. I don't want to be alone. I'm nervous about what the future is going to bring for me. Do me a favor. If you're going to find out about your mazel, can you find out about my mazel as well? Of course. So the guy goes ahead. The individual in the story finds his malach, finds his angel, and you know, he's so busy asking about the mazel of the tree and the mazel of the princess that he forgets to ask about his own mazel. So Ibn Magid goes on, he's on his way back, he comes across the tree. So the tree said, Nu, what did you find out? So he said, good news. I found out the problem is there's buried treasure underneath you on by your roots, and it's cutting off your roots from going ahead and seeking nourishment from the earth. So the tree says, wonderful, I have the deal of a century. You unearth the treasure, you could keep the treasure, you could be wonderfully wealthy, and I'll be able to bear my fruit. To which the man says, well, I'm sorry, you know what, I don't have time for that. Right? I've got to find my mazel, I don't have time to go ahead and unearth the treasure. So what happens, he goes to the princess says, Nu, what did you find out? So he said, princess, it's because you're looking for love in all the wrong places, as they say. Right? Princess, you think you have to marry royalty. You don't have to marry royalty. Any man who you marry, you will make into a prince. Any man you marry, you'll be able to lift him up. So the princess says, wonderful! I have a great idea. You seem like a nice guy. Let's get married. We'll have a family together, build life together. To which the man says, I'm sorry, I'm too busy finding my mazel. To which the Dubna Magid says, the message is very clear and understandable, that sometimes we're so preoccupied with finding the things we think we need to find that we neglect to see the things that are right in front of us. Avraham Avinu did not live in a parallel universe. Avraham Avinu did not live in a world that was not the same as his peers. Avraham Avinu just chose to live life with open eyes, with open heart, with open soul, with open ears. Avraham Avinu chose to look around the world to question and to try to understand. He looked around the natural world and he found God, and he decided to be attentive and listen and ultimately heed, not just hear, but heed the call of Lech Lecha. This is the first lesson I want to try to bring out tonight about Avraham Avinu. An incredible attentiveness, and I think that for many of us, I shouldn't say many of us, I know for me, I find this to be an incredible lesson, incredible take-home message from the first patriarch. Because at the end of the day, so often, we are so preoccupied with so many different things that are quote-unquote important, that we forget to see the beautiful and meaningful things that are right in front of us, that we forget to see the beautiful opportunities. You know, so often we're fixated on an opportunity or the opportunity or a particular finish on a particular goal, that we forget to see all the magnificent opportunities that line the entire path of the journey. This is the first lesson we take from Avraham Avinu, the lesson of attentiveness. Let me draw your attention now to another lesson. Take a look at number 7. So I want to go back now to the beginning. Remember, I quoted this a couple of times outside. Now we're going to look at it inside. So Hashem said to Avraham Avinu, Lech lecha me'artzecha u'mimoladecha me'savicha la'aretz asher arecha. So remember again, according to most opinions, this is, the first of Avraham Avinu's 10 tests. Everybody agrees there were 10, but there is a dispute as to which tests comprised the 10. So according to most, Lech lecha, leave your home, leave your land, leave everything you know and venture into the great unknown. This is the first of the 10 tests. But I'll draw your attention to something interesting. If you look at number 8, so remember, 7 is the opening verse of Parshas Lech Lecha. 8 is now going back to the end of Parshas Noach. So buried at the end of Parshas Noach, where there's a lot of genealogical information, there's a very important piece of information that often goes unnoticed. The Torah says, Vatihi Sarai Akara in Lavalat. So Sarai, the wife of Avram Avinu, was barren. She did not have children. Vayikach Terach es Avram Beno, ves Lot Ben Haran Ben Beno, ves Sarai Kalaso, Ishes Avram Beno, vayetsu itami or kastim, laleches artso kinaan, vayavou ad Haran vayishvusham. What amazing piece of information is the Torah telling us in Parshas Noach? What is the Torah telling us? They started the journey. And by the way, here's what's amazing. At the end of Parashas Noach, who is the one who is leading the journey? It's Terach. So one second. You know, everybody gets all excited. Lech Lecha Avinu is going into the great unknown. He's leaving his homeland, leaving his birthplace, leaving the place. Wonderful. Only one problem. The journey started in the Parsha before, and Avraham Avinu was not even the instigator. He was not even the catalyst for the journey. It appears that it was Terach who was the one who ultimately picked up the family and decided to leave. So I have a very simple question as to what's going on over here, right? Because there are a number of questions. First of all, why is Terach going to Canaan? What's Terach's interest in Canaan? That's number one. Number two, how are we then to understand the Lech Lecha directive in number 7 if already the journey began earlier in number 8, which was the previous parsha? And question number 3, which is if Terach already began the journey to Canaan, why does he stop in Haran? Why does he not continue on to Canaan? So Rav Soloveitchik has a beautiful insight. The Rav had a number of essays all about Avraham Avinu that were put together in a beautiful book called Abraham's Journey. Multiple essays on Avraham Avinu. So the Rav says something amazing. He says, what prompted Terach to act so strangely? Simple question. Why is Terach picking the family up and going to Canaan? He says, what motivated him to break up his home, uproot his household, abandon luxury, convenience, renown, influence, and power, and become a wanderer, an immigrant, a strange Chaldean? Surely the great revolution in Terach's thinking was precipitated by doubts, soul-searching, and reappraisal. In a word, it was the transvaluation of a Baal Tshuva. That was responsible for the decision to abandon Ur in Chaldea and start out for a primitive land where he planned to begin a new life. So the Rav here advances an incredible idea, which I'm not really doing it total justice, because this is part of a much bigger piece by the Rav. But Rav Soloveitchik suggests, and by the way, he's not the only one who suggests this, the Ibn Ezra suggests this, Radak suggests this, even the Ramban alludes to this as well, that Terach underwent his own cathartic tshuva process. That Terach had a change of heart. At the end of his life now, what sparked it? What changed him? What was it that chose him to reevaluate the way he was living? So that's subject to dispute among the commentaries. But the Rav says, the fact that Terach wanted to take the family to Canaan was because he himself had undergone a spiritual metamorphosis. He was a changed individual. He is the catalyst to go to Canaan. Now, how Terach knew about Canaan, or why Canaan, when God himself, at least in number 7, doesn't even spell out Canaan, these are all good questions. But look at paragraph B. God commanded Avram to emigrate from Ur of the cast of Chaldees after Terach had undergone the great traumatic change. Listen to how the Rav, just imagine this scene for just a moment. In the Rav's model, he actually understands that Lech Lecha, remember, a side note for just a moment. There's a fundamental dispute among the commentaries about the concept of Ein Muktam Umu Uchar BaTorah. Does the Torah follow a chronological sequence or not? That is a fundamental dispute. So again, there are two different sides to this particular question. So the majority opinion is Ein Muktam Uchar BaTorah. The Torah generally does not follow a chronological sequence. Now, just so you understand, that's usually true in what we call Parsha to Parsha, one narrative to the next. But usually within the same narrative, there often is a chronology. Rav Soloveitchik suggests the following. Let's just bear this out for just a moment. That number 7, Lech Lecha, actually occurred before number 8. See, even though Lech Lecha is recorded in Parshas Lech Lecha, and number 8, which tells us about Terach lifting up, uprooting the family, moving them to Canaan, see, even though it sounds like it was Terach's idea to first go to Canaan, and then only afterwards does God tell Avram Lech Lecha, in fact, it was not like that, says the Rav. But rather, the command to Lech Lecha came earlier, which, by the way, just makes sense. Why does it make sense? Good, because remember, God tells Avram, and we're going to get into this in just a moment, Lech Lecha mi'artzecha, mi'moladetcha, mi'beis avicha. If they had already left Ur Kasdim at the time of Lech Lecha of number 7, then Avram Avinu had already left artzecha and moladetcha. He had already left his birthplace and his homeland. Therefore, says the Rav, it has to be that the command of Lech Lecha actually came before Terach decided to move the family to Canaan. Now watch this dramatic scene unfold. Number 9, paragraph B. God commanded Avram to emigrate from Ur of the Chaldees after Terach had undergone the great dramatic change and had decided to give up everything and go forth to a new world. Get ready. Whether Terach knew of Avram's rendezvous with God in the fertile fields of Chaldea under the starry night sky is hard to ascertain. Equally difficult to answer is the question of whether Avram ever told Terach about the instructions he received from God pertaining to the journey to an unknown country. However, all that is irrelevant. What is important is the coincidence of revelation and free decision. When the command of Lech Lecha came, and Avram began to pack his bags, he realized to his great surprise that his father's bags had already been packed long before. Can you imagine this scene? Avram Avinu was told, Lech Lecha. Avram Avinu was told, listen, you got to leave this place, you have to leave everything you know and venture into the unknown. He comes home to pack his stuff, and what does he find before he's even able to say a word? What does he find? He finds that Terach is there calling a family meeting, saying, listen, here's the deal. We're leaving Ur Kasdim. We're heading to an unknown land called Canaan. Why, says Terach? Because that's what I feel we need to do for the spirituality of the family. Avram Avinu realizes what is unfolding over here. All of these years, he's been locked in bitter, difficult, theological, religious, spiritual debate with his father. And in that moment, when he thought he was coming home to sever ties from the family, what does he find? What does he find?
His father's ahead of him.
His father's ahead of him. His father's already there. See, Avram's been told by God. Avram's been told by God. See, here's the great irony of ironies. What happened to Terach? I mean, we could speculate. What happened to Terach? Oh, this is the great, incredible evolution of this narrative. It's possible that the attentiveness that we thought was the hallmark of Avram Avinu was possessed by his father as well. Maybe to take it a step further, maybe the attentiveness that Avram Avinu had came from his father. Just it happened to be Terach's attentiveness self-actualizes, or Terach self-actualizes a bit later than his son. But the amazing part is that the evolution that the son undergoes, S-O-N, is the same evolution the father, Terach, undergoes, albeit a bit later. And this evolution that is sparked by this life attentiveness leads them both to the same exact place. Both realize that to fully self-actualize on a spiritual level, we can't do it here. And so father and son, and again, the Rav describes this in such a beautiful way, father and son, you know, there's nothing worse than familial discord. There's nothing worse. You know how the Navi Yeshayo describes the Messianic era? One of the ways he describes it is the Heshev Levaval Sabanim V'Lev Banim Alavosam. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will return the hearts of the children to the father and the hearts of the father to the children. One of the first things that's going to be the hallmark of the Messianic era is a healing of familial rifts, is a healing of familial discord and strife. All of these years, and you know, here's the great irony. Avraham Avinu is the great man of chesed, the great man of peace, the great man of love for all people, and yet, the only people he can't get along with is who? This is not such an uncommon narrative, right? Meaning, yeah, I'm great with everyone except my own family, right? I'm great with everyone. Now, it's true, we don't see his identity as the Isha Chesed until later on, that unfolds later on, but at the end of the day, there's something so dramatic unfolding over here. So in these last psukim of Noach, in the beginning of Lech Lecha, we finally find father and son united in purpose. They are together. They are biyachad for the first time in Avraham Avinu's adult life. He has a relationship with his father. For the first time in his adult life, he speaks a common language as his father. For the first time in his adult life, he probably feels accepted and loved by his father. He comes home to pack, says the Rav, and he finds that his father's already packed up. So the Rav goes on. He says, in the middle of paragraph C, when the command of Lech Lecha, so skip down, father and son, hitherto locked in mortal combat, joined hands, and together started out on the great march to Canaan, away from the hustling, bustling cities of Chaldea, away from a highly developed country, away from a magical, well-organized, and disciplined social order. Paragraph D. Terach felt the mysterious pull that the Holy Land exerted upon those who search for meaning and the rationale in life, and to our who are questing for God. For that was his intention, as well as that of his father when they originally sent out from Ur of Chaldees. But of course, in spite of his good intentions, in spite of his penitential mood, tshuva, and his courage to leave home for a distant land, Terach did not succeed. Because you see, remember, everything is beautiful, everything is great. There's only one problem, which is the family gets to Haran, and for some reason, Terach does not go on. So, of course, the simple answer is why? Because he died. But we know again, or because maybe he was, but we know, remember, there were a number of years in which the family was in. We know this because Rashi does for us the whole timeline of these events. So we know again that it was some significant amount of time that the family was in Haran. So could it be that he was just old and tired? It could be. Although one would have to ask, if you already left everything, if you left your whole life behind, Haran is not that far from Canaan. It's not that far. So literally, unless he's in his, you know, throes of death, and he can't make the journey, why don't you continue on? The truth is, that's a question that's out there. We could speculate. I often thought the answer is because change is difficult. Change is exceptionally difficult. And very often, we begin to pull the trigger on change, and we just can't seal the deal. Because at the end of the day, when I realize what I have to give up, when I realize what I have to sacrifice, when I realize that I have to alter myself, I have to change myself, that's exceptionally difficult. But again, we don't know. All we know is that Terach tells Avram, you know what? I think we're going to stay in Haran. And watch this. Terach did not succeed. He did not reach the destination. He settled in Haran and died there. Avram continued the march to the land of Canaan and implemented the vision. In spite of the change that occurred in him, Terach did not succeed in transforming himself totally. He still had fears and doubts. He fluctuated and was unsure of himself. He lacked the heroic quality his son possessed. He did not know the response of Hineni, I am here. So why am I bringing this out to you? Because just let's follow this train of thought for just a moment. So we go from a very difficult family life, discord between father and son, to finally to the point that after Avraham Avinu hears Lech Lecha, he comes home to find that Terach has had his own Lech Lecha experience. And by the way, one could even argue that Terach's Lech Lecha experience may be even greater than Avram's, because, well, I should say, they're really the same. They're both a manifestation of life attentiveness. Father and son are on the same theological page. They get to Haran. Now, could we even imagine the simcha, the joy that Avraham Avinu must have felt reconciling with his father. You know, anyone who has ever experienced a strained familial relationship knows that when you have the opportunity to heal that rift, we have the opportunity to heal, to mend that relationship, there's a feeling of boundless joy. There's a feeling like you won the emotional relationship lottery. There is an ability, there is an unbridled joy that exists. Avraham Avinu is filled with his joy for this reconciliation. And yet what happens? What happens? What happens is that in Haran, when Terach says, I am not going any further, Avraham Avinu has to decide on what? He has to decide. I finally have reconciliation with my father. So do I stay here with the intact familial unit after all of these years? Or do I go ahead and continue to still hear the call of Lech Lecha? Why is this tension important? Because remember, as I said before, according to most of the opinions, Lech Lecha is the first of the 10 tests. But remember, I'll ask you a very simple question. If God appeared to you and told you, Lech Lecha, I need you to pick up, I need you to leave everything you know, I need you to go to another land, but I promise you that life is going to be amazing. You're going to have boundless blessing, everything is going to be great, your family is going to be fantastic. What would you do? Assuming you knew the voice was God. Let's make that assumption right now. Right? Assuming you knew for sure the voice was God, what would you do? You'd listen. If God himself makes you a promise, if God himself says, I know it's a little bit scary, change is always difficult, but if God assures you of success, if God promises you that things are going to be okay, you'll excuse me, what's the big deal? You know, I don't have the belief of Avraham Avinu. I'm a speck on Avraham Avinu's, fingernail. But if God were to come to me tonight and tell me, I need you to do this, I'd say, okay, especially if it comes with promises of success. So why is this such a great test? Why is this so difficult? And now we understand. Because God was asking Avraham Avinu to give up what? To give up what? To give up the relationship with his father that he finally had after all of these years. He's been an orphan with living parents. He's been an estranged child. He's been on the outs with his father. You know, you don't have to be Sigmund Freud to know that one of the most important relationships we have in life are the relationships we have with our parents. They forge and they mold every single other life relationship we have. Avraham Avinu finally has that relationship after all these years. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes to him and says, I'm sorry. You gotta leave Haran. You have to leave Haran. You have to pick up. You have to go. You have to distance yourself. That's the test of Lech Lecha. It's not a test. God promised him was going to be successful. The test was, are you going to be willing to give up that relationship that for years you lacked and now you finally have? Which then begs the question, yes. So Rashi points out, Rashi, when he calculates the years, understands that Avram must have left Haran before Terach died. That's Rashi's calculation. It could be that there are other commentaries that disagree with that timeline. I don't know, but Rashi's calculations of the years working backwards from Avram Avinu's death, he says that Terach was still lived another number of years even after Avram Avinu left. See, he left, and by the way, to compound it, he left an elderly parent behind in Haran. Right, he left an elderly parent behind in Haran. An elderly parent with whom he just had a reestablished relationship. Yes?
Well, you have parallels in the Bible. You have the story of Moses. The same thing. He had a vision. He wanted to go to the promised land. He didn't make it. This is a parallel with that.
Right.
What are you looking at?
It's true, except remember, one didn't make it because he wasn't allowed to go in. One didn't make it because he chose not to journey on. That's the fundamental distinction, right? Moshe didn't go on, didn't not enter because of his own volition or his own choice. He made a mistake.
I understand you're making the leap of faith, though, as a calculation of whether he died or didn't die.
Correct. The Rav is basing himself really based on the timeline of Rashi, which indicates to us that Terach could have gone, could have made it, at least because he was still alive, to Canaan. Avraham Avinu still leaves when Terach is still alive. Absolutely. And again, I can't say that all of the Mefarshim agree with Rashi because I just haven't done that survey of the commentaries. Could be that others would disagree with this timeline. It's quite possible. So now, why am I sharing this with you? Question? Yes?
Why
please.
But the number 8 is Terah took Abram, came to him and said, "The family's moving. We're moving. We are going somewhere, and we stopped at Haran, and maybe we settled there." And without needing to change the timeline and, you know, the sequencing, while he was in Haran, Hashem comes to Abram and says, "You're not done yet. Lech Lecha." So it's a Lech Lecha. Did it have to happen?
No, you're saying, right? I'm just telling you, you're only leaving out one piece of information, which is that the verse explicitly says that Terach took his family to go to the land of Canaan. That was his intention. His intention was to ultimately get there. Yes, so is it possible to say that Lech Lecha really comes after this, that God appears to Avram when he's in Haran and says, "Listen, you have to remove yourself even further from this"? Absolutely. The only problem I would tell you with that is the wording of the verse. Because God tells Avram to leave your father's home, your land, your birthplace, your father's home. If he had already left Ur Kasdim and was in Haran, all God would need to tell him was, "Leave your father's home." That's all he would have to say. But again, the answer is there are many other commentaries that understand it in a simple progression of the verses, that Lech Lecha comes after the journey. I'm just bringing this down because I think that if you understand it like Rashi understands, like the Rav is understanding it, it just weaves a dramatic narrative. So remember, so what's the message embedded here? The question then becomes that we have to ask ourselves is, so why does Avram have to leave his father? So why does he have to leave? And for that matter, let's go all the way back. Why was there a command of Lech Lecha? You know, one of the most important things that we believe in Judaism, let me take fast forward a little bit, because it was just mentioned about Moshe Rabbeinu. You know, if I were to ask you, if you were to plan Sinaitic revelation, I should say differently, if you were to plan the giving of the Torah, and you had to do a destination Torah giving event, right? So what destination would you choose? Where would you choose? Right? Yerushalayim. Specifically where? Right? I would think the Har HaBayis. Right? After all, again, remember, the Har HaBayis is sanctified already earlier on. The Medrash has Adam already on Har HaBayis. The Medrash has Akedah happening on Har HaBayis. There's a lot of stuff already happening on the Temple Mount earlier, even before it's the Temple Mount. So I would have thought that if you wanted to really choose a site for the revelation upon which our entire religion is really based on and rooted in, why are you having it in the middle of nowhere? In the middle of nowhere, right? Isn't it amazing? Har Sinai, right? Go and find it. So of course you'll find a guy, there's some guy, here's Har Sinai. No one knows where Har Sinai is. No, people could tell you the general region. We know the general region where Har Sinai is because we know biblically where Klal Yisrael traveled. So we could tell you the general region, right? We could tell you where we think the general, Har Sinai, but nobody could tell you what mountain was Har Sinai. Isn't that strange? Isn't that strange? We know we have so many special sites in Judaism, so many Makomos Kedoshim, so many holy spots. And yet the spot of mass revelation, we don't know the address. Is that strange? It
makes sense.
Why?
Because that is so, so powerfully important that it needs the anonymity. And also, although the revelation is for the Jewish people, it's also for the whole world.
Oh,
so that's why it wouldn't be.
So let me take that just a little bit. Let me just tweak that a little bit. Rav Kook, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, brings down an incredible idea. He says that if Torah were to be given in Eretz Yisrael, which we would have thought, again, if we were planning that destination revelation, I would have done it there. One would think that there is only spirituality in Israel. One would think that the only way to be connected to God and the only way to be connected to Torah is in Eretz Yisrael. Now, I'll tell you, I'm a big Zionist. I love Eretz Yisrael. I'm in the wrong profession to have a parnasa there. But at the end of the day, my heart is there. Like Rabbi Nachman said, L'chol makom shani holech, ani holech liYerushalayim. Eretz Yisrael, different versions. Right? Eretz Yisrael is the most, we would all agree, the most magnificent land to breathe the air. It is an incredible privilege. But you don't have to be in Israel to find God. and you don't have to be in Israel to be spiritual, and you don't have to be in Israel to be righteous or to be wonderful. The Torah is purposely given in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of nowhere, to show us that wherever you are, you could bring your Torah with you. So Avraham Avinu, why is God causing him to sever these relationships? Right, Avraham Avinu is all about bringing people together, all about creating relationships, and yet again, he's obligated to go ahead and sever this relationship. And again, it would be a strong question by itself, but after you see the Rav, and after you understand that finally, after all these years, we're so happy that he has a father back in his life, and we're happy for Terach that he has an Avram back in his life, and yet God tells him to go. So why? Why that need to go? So take a look at number 10. So I want to share with you a beautiful idea by Rabbi Nachman of Breslov. Rabbi Nachman says over here in his Likutei Halachos, you know, Rabbi Nachman himself didn't really commit anything to writing. I put for you a little biography over here about Rabbi Nachman, who was an exceptionally unique and special neshama. You know, Rabbi Nachman died at the age of 38, very young age. It's interesting how you see a number of great personalities, like Rav Moshe Chaim Lutzato, Ramchal died at the age of 39. These individuals who, thank God, maximized their youth, were able to leave us with such great treasures of theology and of spirituality and of Torah thought. So Rabbi Nachman didn't really commit all that much, didn't commit anything to writing. His primary disciple, a man by the name of Rabbi Nosson, is the one who pretty much codified all of his teacher's writings. So one of the groupings is called the Kutei Halachos. What Rabbi Nachman does is Rabbi Nachman goes through halachos and Shulchan Aruch, but pulls out like the deeper spiritual meaning. You know, halacha, people often think that Jewish law is just a series of do's and don'ts. Jewish law is the way that the rabbis went ahead and transmitted to us moral and ethical law. So behind every single halacha, behind every do and don't, is a deeper moral, ethical, theological message as well. So Rabbi Nachman over here writes, we're not going to get into the halacha, but he comments over here on Lech Lecha. We're not going to do this whole piece, just a few parts of it. Look what he writes, Lech Lecha. So first of all, Rabbi Nachman begins with a different question. We're going to bring this all together. Rabbi Nachman says, why did it say Lech Lecha? Remember again, Lech Lecha literally means, how would you translate it? Go for yourself. It could have just said Lech. Could have just said go. And Rashi, everybody asked this question. Right? So why does it say Lech Lecha? So Rabbi Nachman says something quite beautiful. He says, V'zeu Lech Lecha, Lecha Daika, Shekol Hiluchach Unesiascha Yihyeh Lecha Ve'elecha Levad, Lahainu Le'etzem Nekudas Ha'emesh Zeh Ikarcha V'chiyuscha. So Rabbi Nachman says something absolutely beautiful. Rabbi Nachman says that God is telling Avraham Avinu, Lech Lecha, you need to go find yourself. You need to go find yourself. You see, Avram, you're doing great. You know, like if we go back to the beginning of the class, right, to Sadar Avram, you found me. You found me from the world. You found me through your attentiveness. You're doing great. But you haven't even begun to skim the surface of your potential. You have so much to give, so much to do, so much to become. I need you to take this journey, not for me, but Lech, I need you to go, Lecha, in order to find yourself. I need you to find the deeper you. I need you to find the true you. I need you to uncover who you are capable of becoming. And the Rebbe goes on with that, skip down a few lines, says, Ki ikir ha'adam hu ha'neshama ha'kidosha shebo. You know, the primary aspect of us, you know, in general, you see this in many Musar works, that in life, there's a very important definition that we have to decide on. A person has to decide, am I a soul that happens to be clothed by a body, or am I a body that happens to contain a soul? Now that's not just wordsmithing, that's a very important, almost like life definition. What is the primary part of my persona? What am I at my core? At my core, am I just a body that happens to be infused with some spirituality? Or am I truly at my core a spiritual being that happens to be cloaked by a body? Because without my physicality, I couldn't change the world. Without my physicality, I couldn't improve the world. Without my physicality, I couldn't do anything to somehow partner with God to build the world. So that's a question of self-definition. Rabbi Nachman says, the Lecha, right? The Lecha, the you, is the neshama. So Avram, you have so much spiritual energy and potential that you have not yet even begun to unlock. You need to journey because you need to find it. But Avram, if you're Avram Avinu, now Avram Avinu, he doesn't question, right? That's part of the incredible aspect of his persona. He never questions. He just does. Or I should say differently. He never questions when it comes to himself. He questions when it comes to others, right? He'll question why God is destroying stone. But he never questions Lech Lecha. And he never questions Akedas Yitzchak, right? The sacrifice. He never questions those things. So Avram doesn't question. But I have a question. Based on what we just said before, if we could receive the Torah in the middle of nowhere, why can't Avram Avinu find himself in the middle of nowhere also? Meaning, why can't you go up to a hilltop in Mesopotamia or somewhere? Go find some nice forest in Ur Kasdim. Why do you have to go ahead and venture into the great unknown, away from anything and everything you've known until now? And Rabbi Nachman says something so beautiful. If you skip a little bit, we're not going to do all of this. Go to paragraph Gimel. He says, V'zeu lech lecha me'artzcha me'ulatcha me'savicha. Ki kama mine choshech u'shkarim hanimshachim me'artzcha. Da'ainu me'ha'ir v'ha'medina sh'nisgadaba. Paragraph Dal, I'm just going to read it and I'll explain. Ki zeyadua sh'aklipa kadma l'pri u'b'chol ba. Ki zeyadua sh'aklipa, I'm sorry, u'b'chol eretz, u'b'chol makom. Af api sh'yesham har be'tov. Aval yesh b'chol kam, b'chol makom kama mine chashechos ha'machshichem esa emes. Says Rabbi Nachman, because sometimes, the place that we're living has toxic influences. Sometimes the place in which we are, you know, there's a statement in the Gemara of Mishana Makom, Mishana Mazel. Right? Everyone's heard this expression, right? You change your place, you change your, what is that, like some kind of hocus pocus thing? I pick up, I move to New Jersey, ta-da, suddenly everything is wonderful, it's going to be great. Mishana Makom, Mishana Mazel. No. What Mishana Makom, Mishana Mazel means is that sometimes there's a recognition that there are certain elements in the place where I am living that are toxic. There are certain negative influences. Sometimes those could be societal influences. Sometimes we'll discuss those could be peer influences. But sometimes there's just negative influences. And you know what? I can't self-actualize if I am surrounded by those negative influences. You have to leave Artzach. Ur Kasdim is not the place for you. Now, I just want to be clear. You know, we often have this way of kind of romanticizing the grass is always greener on the other side. It's like when you speak to people think about, you know, life in the shtetl before the war. Oh, life in the shtetl before the war was horrible. There was poverty, there was anti-Semitism, there were pogroms, there was mass illiteracy. It wasn't, okay, you're right, you had a lot of beautiful, simple Jews who had pure emunah, pure belief, but they had a ton of problems, trust me. Do not trade what we have. Don't think that the grass was any greener. It was much, much worse. So what do you think? That Canaan is like Borough Park? Canaan is like Lakewood? Right? Canaan is like Baltimore? It's like Mea Shearim? What do you think Canaan is? Canaan is filled with pagan tribes as well. Canaan is filled with idolatry. We know that because fast forward. And what's the first thing the Jewish people need to do when they enter into the land of Israel under Yoshua, under Joshua? What's the first thing? Clean out the idolatry. There was always idolatry in Canaan, and it could be there was more idolatry in Canaan than there was in Ur Kasdim. So what do you think? You're not going to some type of spiritual paradise, some spiritual Gan Eden. But there were things in Ur Kasdim. There were negative aspects in Ur Kasdim that would stunt Avram Avinu's growth. You have to leave Artzach. What's next? Skip down to paragraph Hey. Look what Rabbi Nachman says, and this is beautiful. Mimoladitcha. So Artzach literally means God tells Avram, you need to leave because there are things that are holding you back. You need to leave because there are certain societal influences in the place where you live. Maybe it's societal influences, maybe it's influences of friends, whatever it might be. But there's stuff that's holding you back and you need to leave. What's the next thing God says to Avram? Moladitcha. Now get ready for this. This is beautiful. Paragraph Hey, Moladitcha. Moladitcha literally means what? Literally? Your birthplace. What does that mean? Dahainu. Sheyetze mehara v'hachoshech sheyeshbo mitzad haholada. So says Rabbi Nachman something amazing. Molaritcha means each of us are born with certain innate traits, proclivities, and predispositions. But just because we are born with certain, we'll call it weaknesses, does not mean we have to yield to them. Does not mean that we don't have the ability to transcend them. So whatever Avraham Avinu's personal weaknesses are, I don't know what his weaknesses are, but whatever they are, Avraham, there are certain handicaps that you may have, certain deficiencies that you may have, certain Achilles heels that you may possess that are just innate to you. We all have our weaknesses. Avraham, I need you to leave Moladitcha. I need you not to surrender to your innate weaknesses or deficiencies. Instead, I need you to overcome and transcend them. I need you to wage battle against them. I need you to conquer them. I need you to overcome them. And lastly, what does he say? Paragraph above. And get ready for this. Mi beis avicha. I need you to leave your father's home. And what does that mean, says Rabbi Nachman? Shehu mishpachto. I need you to leave your family. He says, Kiyesh Katlakuri writes, Kiyesh kamashtusim ushkarim shenidbak bo mitzad mishpachto. Sometimes there's some shtuyot. Sometimes there's some craziness. There's some silliness. And there's some bad stuff sometimes in our family that handicaps or that stymies our growth. He says, Shemachzikin atzma lemiuchas. Okay, he goes on and explains this. Rabbi Nachman says something amazing. Rabbi Nachman says, this is the command of Lech Lecha. The command of Lech Lecha is mi'artzecha. Avram, you have to learn to transcend and to overcome the communal or societal factors that are holding you back. Mimoladitcha, you have to learn to overcome and transcend your innate weaknesses that are holding you back. Umibeis avicha. And sometimes, as difficult as it may seem, if your family is holding you back, you need to learn how to let go of them as well. In other words, what is the Kaddish Baruch Hu telling Avraham Avinu? That sometimes in life, and I don't think it's sometimes, I think all the times, we all have things in life that hold us back from self-actualizing. We all have things in life that prevent us from growing, that prevent us from becoming the people we know we can be and we need to be. But often those things that are holding us back are things that are important to us, or things that we like, or sometimes even things that we love, or things that we've had in our lives as fixtures for a very long time. And so, to be honest, we're often unwilling to let them go. I know I should let it go, but I'm unwilling to let it go because I'm too attached to it. The message of Lech Lecha, which was the message of Avraham Avinu, was the ability to identify those things that hold us back and to find the courage to let them go, to transcend and to overcome. And this is the second trait and the last trait for tonight of Avraham Avinu that I want to draw your attention to. The real greatness of Avraham Avinu is that he understood that his destiny, he understood he had a destiny. And he understood that to be able to actualize that destiny, he had to find those things that were shackling him to a present mediocrity. And he had to find the courage to kind of cut off the shackles, to free himself, to allow himself to swim to the surface, to allow himself to self-actualize. And that came, I want to be clear, with great pain. Now, I just want to point out, Avraham Avinu did not leave Ur Kasdim on his own. I just want to point that out. Avraham Avinu did not, because you know why? You know, the Gemara says that there are certain things that they are chein al yoshes, certain things that find favor in a person's eyes, even if everyone else thinks you're crazy. What's one of the things that finds favor in a person's eyes that often people can't understand? Where you live. Where you live. You know, I don't know if anyone noticed, we unfortunately have a very high homicide rate. Probably, I don't know if you follow the news at all. You ever wondered to yourself, like, why do we live here? I'm saying, like, what? Like, it's, if you think about it, it's a little bit crazy. I have family members and friends who ask me this question all of the time. Did you hear what happened in Baltimore? I said, yes, like 2 miles from my house. I heard what happened in Baltimore. And do you, aren't you, why? Why? Because the answer is, because this place has a chein for us. Because I love it. We all love it for different reasons. Avraham Avinu was not running away from Ur Kasdim because there were a group of... That was his home. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu opened his eyes to once. Avraham Avinu was mekabel. What he accepted is, I can't grow here. It's like being that tree. Like we saw in the Dubna Magid's mashal, in the Dubna Magid's parable. It's being that tree. The roots, there's just not enough nutrients here for me. I can't grow. I love it here. This is my home. This is where I grew up. This is where my family was. This is where my friends were. But I can't be here anymore. Fine. They go to Haran. Fine. We're out of Ur Kasdim. Avram, you got to leave your family. Because as much as Terach has undergone his own journey, no, Terach's journey came to an end in Haran. Avram, your journey can't end here. You have to go further. You have to continue. You have to let go of your father. You have to let go of your father. You have to let go of your family because, yes, your father, your family, that peckle is holding you back. you need to let go, you need to transcend in order that you could self-actualize. And Avram, you're going to have to come to grips with your weaknesses, your internal weaknesses, and you can't go ahead and say, no, this is how I was created. You know, the Rambam brings down, just as an aside, in Ilchos Deos, the Rambam says that there are certain character traits, you know, in general, the Rambam says that we always try to follow the middle path, which means you're supposed to have a little bit of every single midah. There's one midah, one character trait, the Rambam says that you are not allowed to possess. What's the one character trait you can't possess? Anger. Anger. Can't possess anger. Anger is a destructive midah, destructive character trait. So the Rambam says something amazing. The Rambam says, Sunu, so what happens if I have a short fuse? Right, but what should I do? I get angry, so what should I do? So listen to this incredible piece of Maimonidean advice. A struggle with a flaring temper. You know what the Rambam says? Three words. Stop getting angry. See, I could have been the Rambam, right? If that's the advice. What is the Rambam saying? I'm saying is, we control the power to change. We control the power to change. I have a short fuse? Change it. I have a bad temper? Change it. I have deleterious character traits? Change them. Transcend, overcome, and change. That's moladetcha. Yes, we might be born with certain weaknesses, but those weaknesses are not irreversible. Those weaknesses are not conquerable. We have the ability to become whatever type of person we desire. And herein lies the real greatness of Avraham Avinu. His ability to ultimately recognize that in order to grow, you have to let go. And he had the courage and he had the strength to be able to let go of those things that would prevent his growth. He was able to transcend, to overcome, and to let go of those things that would have shackled him to a present life of mediocrity in order to be able to go on to actualize and to seize his destiny. So if we bring everything together, we emerge with tonight three basic understandings or appreciations of Avraham Avinu. So the first thing, although we did not give it any attention tonight, but Avraham Avinu, of course, is the Isha Chesed. He is the man of kindness. He's the man that's sitting by the entranceway of the tent just a few days post-circumcision. He's the man, Vayita Eshel, right? Whether it was an orchard or whether it was a bed and breakfast, whatever it was, he was the man who was constantly trying to give to others. That's the first attribute. The second attribute you saw is the attribute of attentiveness. Avraham Avinu finds God by being attentive. Avraham Avinu was not chosen by God, but instead he chooses God. How? By being attentive. He chose to listen to Lech Lecha. We then saw that the third attribute of Avraham Avinu was the ability to detach. That as much again as Avraham Avinu was in such a good place in his life, before the command of Lech Lecha, or I should say, at the time of Lech Lecha, father and son are finally connected. Father and son are finally together, begin this beautiful journey together. Avraham Avinu recognizes that there are things in life, each and every one of us has things in life that tether us to mediocrity, that keep us rooted in place. And Avraham Avinu teaches us to find the courage to A, identify those things, and to find the strength to be able to cut ourselves loose, to be able to let them go, to be able to overcome, to transcend, to be able to leave Artzucha, those things in our society or in our home lives that are holding us back, to be able to leave Beis Avicha, those things in sometimes our families that are holding us back, and to be able to overcome Moladetcha, even those inherent or innate weaknesses that are holding us back. That was the strength of Avraham Avinu, and Halavai, that should be the strength that we should be zocha, that we should be privileged to find within ourselves as well. All right, stop over here.